Hi there, Arthur Jackson here, long overdue podcast. I think I'll talk about prosthetic joint infections today. I think when seeing a patient with a prosthetic joint infection, it's important to be very methodical and to be very specific about what you're dealing with. It's very important to realize that prosthetic joint infections are not a one size fits all, and there are different strategies depending on the patient characteristics and the organism characteristics. Working as an ID doctor, you get a little bit of a skewed opinion about prosthetic joints because you see the ones that go wrong. But thankfully, the statistics suggest that it's only 1 to 2% of patients who get infection after hip or knee replacement, and elbow replacement, slightly more than that, potentially 2 to 10%. The most common organisms associated with prosthetic joint infections are the staphylococci, specifically Staph aureus, and the coagulase negative staphylococci. However, although staphylococci are the majority of the organisms causing prosthetic joint infection, it's important to realize that any organism can cause such an infection. I'm going to allude to biofilms as well. So biofilms are this slimy matrix that occur usually at the interface of the body and prosthetic material, and they lead to real difficulties in eradicating infection because the biofilm provides an opportunity for the bacteria to hide out and resist the body's immune system, and often they stay there in an inactive, dormant state, and when antibiotics are stopped, they can lead to further seeding of infection in the area, getting you back to stage one. So management or eradication of the bacteria and the biofilm is very important. Prosthetic material in situ, it's very appropriate to use one of the antibacterials that has biofilm activity. Diagnosis of the prosthetic joint infection is often made by the time the ID specialist is involved. Sometimes it's very obvious that the joint is infected and there is fever, pain, redness, but sometimes it's more subtle and it can be difficult to make the diagnosis. The International Consensus Meeting on Periprosthetic Joint Infections came up with diagnostic criteria, and they use the system of having major criteria and minor criteria. If you have three minor criteria, it's considered a likely prosthetic joint infection. And if you have one major criterion, it's considered a likely prosthetic joint infection. The major criteria are pretty straightforward. If you have more than one periprosthetic culture with the same organism, that is a major criterion. And the other major criterion is having a sinus tract that goes down as far as the prosthetic joint. The minor criteria are more vague. And they include raised CRP and ESR, raised synovial white cell count, raised synovial polymorphonuclear percentage, and histology suggesting infection and a single positive culture. It's absolutely suggested to be off antibiotics for 2 weeks prior to sampling synovial fluid, but that's often not very easy. They do also say that the synovial fluid itself has a sensitivity of around about 60%, so not ideal. So if I've made the diagnosis of a prosthetic joint infection, or if I'm considering the diagnosis, the other major important thing to classify it is whether this is an acute prosthetic joint infection or a chronic prosthetic joint infection. Reasonably straightforward because there are criteria. So if it is symptoms only originating within the last 3 weeks, you can consider that to be acute. Or else, if the symptoms have arisen within 4 weeks of surgery, that can be considered acute. Once you are more than 1 month removed from the initial surgery, if the symptoms have been going on for longer than 3 weeks, you should consider it a chronic infection. The reason why it's so important to differentiate between acute and chronic infection is that chronic infections require more aggressive surgery. For acute infections, you can get away with removing just the mobile parts of the joint, but for chronic infections, you need to remove the entire prosthesis. An important thing to realize is when we talk about treatment for prosthetic joint infections, the first thing I'm wondering about is the treatment strategy rather than the antibiotic choices. So if there is an early or an acute infection, you can go with retention of some of the prosthesis, and the strategy there is called a debridement and retention strategy, or the other terminology for it is a DAIR strategy, debridement, antibiotics, and implant retention. The two other strategies would be a one-stage exchange, a two-stage exchange, and occasionally there are multi-stage exchanges in very complex cases. The other strategy that can be employed but is not recommended is a non-surgical strategy, and this really would be aggressive antibiotic therapy followed by long-term suppressive antibiotic therapy, and reserved for people who really can't tolerate surgery. The one-stage exchange is when you remove the infected joint at the same surgical procedure when you reinsert the new prosthesis. And this is all done under the cover of antibiotics. It is suitable for people who have a good bones, good soft tissue, no sinus tract, and no multi-resistant organisms or difficult to treat infections, and that you do have the ability to use antibiotics that have biofilm activity. In my opinion, the two-stage exchange is slightly more conservative, but easier to get your head around and intuitively understand. The one-stage exchange is traditionally more favored in Europe as opposed to North America. For a two-stage exchange, remove the infected joint, treat with antibiotics for a period of time, give a short period of time without antibiotics to establish whether or not you've fully eradicated the infection, and then re-implant a new joint. You usually don't need prolonged antibiotics after that period if the cultures after the second implantation are negative. Guidelines differ depending on where you look. Now we get on to the tricky part of things, which is the choice of antibiotics and the duration of antibiotics. Everyone agrees that at least 2 weeks of intravenous antibiotics is required, regardless of what the strategy is. If there is retention of fixed components, such as you might do with an acute infection, at least 2 weeks IV followed by 10 weeks oral is what's recommended by TREMPUS. We would be somewhat more conservative and give 6 weeks of intravenous therapy followed by 6 weeks of oral therapy. Recommendations are similar for a one-stage exchange, and once again, we would be somewhat more conservative and give a slightly longer period of IV antibiotic prior to switching to oral antibiotic. For a two-stage exchange, ideally you'll know your organism at the time of the first surgery. After you've removed the joint, you would then give pathogen-directed intravenous antimicrobial therapy for up to 6 weeks, and once again, we would usually go with the 6-week duration. Ideally, there would be a period without antibiotics at that time, and then surgery would be performed to re-implant a prosthesis using normal antimicrobial prophylaxis and biopsies for culture at the time of surgery. Post-op empiric antimicrobial therapy matching the first infection would be given, and these would be stopped if the cultures return as negative as would be expected. In terms of durations of the antibiotics, for the procedures where the prosthetic material is retained, we would give at least 3 months total duration of antibiotics, and if there were serious negative prognostic features, we would give long-term oral suppression as well. If the joint that has been infected is a prosthetic knee, the duration should be 6 months once the prosthetic material is retained. For a two-stage exchange, you usually don't need long-term antimicrobial suppression. From a point of view of choosing the right antibiotic, it's important to use the best acting antibiotic available to you and to consider issues relating to antimicrobial stewardship as well, if you can. If it's a staphylococcal infection, you need to know exactly what type of staphylococcal infection. That means, is it MRSA, is it MSSA, or is it coagulase negative staph? MRSA means it won't be susceptible to flucloxacillin or the normal beta-lactams. MSSA means that it is susceptible to flucloxacillin, and in these cases, flucloxacillin or cefazolin will be the two best antibiotics in terms of activity.
Ceftriaxone is also effective for MSSA, not quite as microbiologically active, even though there is good evidence supporting its use. Daptomycin has quite a good body of evidence in prosthetic joint infections against staphylococcal organisms and is usually reserved for MRSA infections or those patients with MSSA who are intolerant of the anti-staphylococcal penicillins. Other agents used for MRSA infections include vancomycin, linezolid, and doxycycline, the latter one, doxycycline, often being used for oral step-down if susceptibility is shown. Especially if the staphylococcal infection, you do need to worry about biofilms when there is residual prosthetic joint material, such as when a DAIR procedure has been performed or when a one-stage exchange is performed. Rifampicin has good activity against staphylococcal biofilms and should be used unless you know it is resistant. For these infections, rifampicin should be given in combination with the primary antimicrobial for the same duration as you'll be using the main antibiotic. However, sometimes rifampicin is not tolerated due to either rash or liver side effects or nausea, and these patients will often still do well with single agent therapy. Streptococcal infections are often susceptible to the simple penicillins that we'd often use these simple penicillins in the hospital. Ceftriaxone can also be used in these infections and has the advantage of being once per day and more convenient for OPAT regimens. Choosing a regimen for other bacterial infections such as gram-negatives can be more complicated, and I'm not going to go into that in detail here. You should really discuss it with your local ID team or micro team if it crops up. In a general sense, these are a very interesting, very satisfying group of patients to treat. They can be challenging as well, given the complexity of the cases and the duration of the required therapy. Due to the prolonged duration, the complications frequently encountered include flares of their comorbid conditions and antibiotic side effects, often requiring changing of the regimen. It's important to be methodical and exact in your initial assessment and your ongoing assessments, and your classification of their infection and treatment strategy is very important. Good news that these patients usually have a good outcome and are very satisfied after a very considered treatment program.